Yes, I need to return this book.
I'm sorry, we can't take this book back.
Why not?
It's been flagged.
Flagged?
It's been in the bathroom.
It says that on the computer?
Please take it home. We don't want it near the other books.
Well, you just lost a lot of business, because I love to read!
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to BiblioBanter. I'm Ellen.
I'm Erin.
I'm Laura.
And I'm Natalia.
And today we're going to be talking about bad readings.
We are going to start today's episode with a game.
Rules are meant to be broken. So our game today is I have three bad bookish behaviors. One of them is true and two of them are not true. And you three have to decide which one is true. Okay, everyone ready?
Yep.
Okay, so option number one, a person who only reads every other page in a book. Option two, a person who cuts long books in half, duct tapes them into two new volumes to make them more portable. And option three, a person who makes transparencies and reads their books from a projector.
I would guess the real one is the number two. Yeah. The duct tape.
I say number two.
Me too.
Natalia, all in agreement?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You're right. That is the real one. This is a shout out to my friend Erin King, who I saw does this. But also, I saw this on Twitter with another author. I think I like a lot of flack for it. It was Alex Christoffi and said, someone yesterday called me a book murderer because I cut long books in half to make them more portable. Yeah, so that's the true one. Maybe somebody does read from a projector, but I don't know about it.
It seems plausible.
It could be helpful if you need to see the font bigger. And also the portable idea, and I think why we all thought that option two was correct, is because it makes the book more usable. It's a logical, practical idea, It's a bad habit because you're damaging the material book, but it's maybe not a bad habit in the sense that you're just trying to read more easily, which brings us to a discussion question, actually. Who says when something is a bad reading practice?
I'm going to say it should be librarians.
It should be librarians. But also, I mean, what about teachers who, or parents who teach children to book? I mean, to read. you learn it from somebody. So then you also learn what a bad practice is. And you maybe learn things that are considered to be bad practices later on. Such as annotating books. You have to do that in high, or at least I had to do that in high school, so that the teacher could see that I had actually read and processed the book. But now, if I were to do that in a library book, for example, it would be considered by many to be a bad reading practice because I am damaging the material book.
I think you came up with a good verb though, Erin, to book. I like it, because it's not the same as reading, is it? To use a book, to know how to properly use a book, is not the same thing as reading a book. But I would agree with you that it's teachers that are probably your first people that actually tell you sternly what you can and cannot do with books. I at least don't remember my parents being terribly strict.
Yeah, I guess in my case, my parents were quite strict, and I learned it mainly from them, how to handle books. And I still remember how when I started going to the university, I was like, okay, come on, I just need it. This is practical. This way it goes way quicker to leave notes on the margins, to annotate books. So I kind of got into it, but I still remember how I was like, do I or don't I? Like, I didn't feel comfortable doing this at first, definitely. Yeah.
I guess it also depends on the type of book. If anybody has read with or to or observed a small child reading, those books do not last long. They get chewed, they get ripped, they get colored in. It's very tactile, the reading experience, and possibly because such small children can't read the words themselves, but they do want to book. They want to interact with this object. My niece is obsessed with books. Obsessed. She carries them around. She looks through them while eating. I mean, it's really adorable, but she doesn't know the words, of course. But she is starting to color, and she doesn't know the difference between coloring paper and books, because it's the same material, right? So who's to say that you can draw in one and not the other? I mean, there are already images in this one, and I just am going to add my own because I'm obviously a skilled illustrator at age two.
How old is your niece? Oh, two, okay.
Well, she's almost two. She's almost two.
Nice, and already a book lover.
Yes, I'm very excited. But again, that brings to the point of who's bringing books to people. Her parents read to her every day, and they have specific reading times. However, they also encourage her to grab a book as a toy. So they do encourage her interaction with books, but they try to already discourage her from ripping the books or chewing on them or drawing in them. So there is already this pre-teacher. What is a bad reading practice?
Discussion. It is hard though, probably for a little person, because the first books I think you get are with that like crunchy material. So it is really a toy more than a book. But I did read somewhere recently that this is absolutely the case, that when a child loves a book most, they destroy it. And it has just something to do with their like intense love of it. Like you said, very tactile experience.
It's the same like with a teddy bear or something like that. When you're a child, you have these things that are kind of talismans for your safety. And I know that books were always something that if I had a book with me, I felt somehow protected.
And we have some terms for books. That book is loved. And it applies to books that we personally love, and you can see the physical markings of love on that book because you've read it multiple times, you've lent it out, you move it from apartment to apartment or house. Also the term that a book is well-traveled for the same actions. You know, it moves around, it is read multiple times. It just, we use books the same way that we did when we were much, much younger, but to a lesser extent, because the books are different. It's not these 5-page illustrated books that you can read in a couple of minutes. It's a tome of 800 pages that you read maybe twice. And
then you just love it at a distance. True, but I think that has a lot also to do with what do we read for? Like as children, it is more of entertainment, right? And a way to learn, but not specifically for school or something. And then we grow up and we have different ideas, different purposes when we're learning, also different formats of books, as like not just the sizes but also formats. Because I think what's important to think or to keep in mind is right now we're mainly talking about printed books somehow automatically, as always, as we always do. Because I believe my bad habits or generally like weird ways of reading an audiobook or listening to an audiobook would be different from my bad reading habits of a printed book.
Yes, and so we're also talking about the material bad habits, I think, that we have when interacting with books. So we've talked about ripping pages and marking in them, but there were a couple other examples, dog earing pages, or licking your finger to turn the page.
But does that actually help in turning the page? I've never tried it, but I don't see how that helps.
I also don't get it. I don't really have a problem with turning a page anyway. Like, I don't know why this has to happen.
I think for some people, it's just habit. My mom does this. And I think it is also maybe more helpful for these very, very thin pages. Because if you go to, like, I'm demonstrating for you guys, these, like, scoop motion almost, like this bend motion to flip the pages, when they're so thin, they don't turn very well, like a dictionary or something.
But I definitely remember that from the phone books. When you really used phone books, that paper was so annoying to try to get just one page to turn. I don't remember if I ever licked my finger, but I can see why you would want to do it. It's just anything to make that a little bit easier.
But then is that really to make it easier to turn a page, or is that just a ritual that we develop as we're learning to read and process? And so that's part of rituals while reading. Like, people do different things, like they might twirl their hair or do something else. And I just wonder if the licking the fingers to turn the page isn't about easy access of pages, but this ritualized way of reading.
I would say it's both. I definitely think it's habitual for some people, and then they don't need to do it, but they do it because they've done it so often. But there are all these tools, this like wet sponge thing in a jar that people sometimes have next to them when they're reading certain books, and they use that to turn pages. So I would say if tools have been developed to aid that practice, it can be useful.
Yeah.
Ellen introduced us to a very funny example, if she'd like to share.
Yeah, I have to look at it, I think. I don't think I could describe it without it.
What inspired this episode, actually?
Yes. I have found the thread, maybe. I think this was originally on Tumblr. So we'll put the whole thing up on the website. It has some questionable language in it, so I'll summarize. So it was a post when someone said, it's past midnight and my grandmother got up and keeps loudly tearing paper right next to my room. By the way, the reason there's paper tearing is because she reads books by tearing them apart page by page as she moves through them, instead of just flipping the pages like a normal human. And then there's a photo of, just pages ripped off. And what I love is, of course, but I mean, hilariously, the cover is also ripped off. So it's just a stub of a book. And I'm going to be honest with you guys. I have done this.
I am shocked. What?
Excuse me.
Why did you do this? What was your thought process in masticating this book?
So it was while camping, and we brought one book, and while reading it, I mean, it's not like it's an enormous
interruption novel. What was the book?
It was a William Gibson novel. I forget which one exactly.
Oh no.
Somehow that's more appropriate then. I don't know why.
Yeah, you know
it
what?
Just
I
is.
Think he'd be on board. I think
yeah, probably he wouldn't mind though.
I think
yeah.
so too, yeah.
But so it was just like, it saved a little bit of space because it was one of those like extra short paperbacks. And it's not like we were going to, I don't know. It was just, we weren't going to read it again. We had heavy backpacks. And I have to say that it was kind of, I don't know, cathartic to be like, and I'm done with this page. And also I've since read that there's a story of Somerset Maugham doing this while reading Proust. And he would like rip off the page and throw it. And I think Proust is also maybe the perfect book for that.
See, now I realize again why I don't like camping, because camping is not very practical for reading. That's what it makes people do.
Just bring an ebook.
So you've mentioned that it's cathartic to rip out the pages of the book, but then it really is a one-time use. So you're restricting then maybe the economic value of the book, because once everything has been ripped out, you can't resell it. It's probably very weird if you give it to somebody. And I know that they rebound older books when they were inherited or purchased by somebody else because the new owner wanted the binding to match their collection, or they just had a different aesthetic preference. But I doubt somebody would rebind a cheap paperback rather than just buy a new copy. So I do think that in one sense, you're removing this economic value for the secondhand aspect. But I also wonder, like, does this woman that does this ritually, does she maybe just need a bookmark?
Okay. Yeah, but maybe it's also an aspect of if she knows this is what she's doing as she's reading, she reads more carefully and more thoroughly. And as she rips the page out, because she knows she won't read it again. So it gives her the impetus to truly digest what she's reading, and then it's put away. So if she hasn't done it in that point, she doesn't have the chance again. And that's that. I don't know.
That's a good point, actually. It's kind of like almost a Buddhist practice of like letting the book go. Mm-hmm. Having just that one experience with it. I mean, I think we've talked about this, like, how do you create a truly singular book experience or reading experience? And it's hard. If you really try to think of how to do that, it's really difficult. And this lady seems to have cracked it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it seems that way. It'd be fun to interview her and talk to her about it and why she does it and what it means to her. But I mean, I'm just saying I can kind of see how that can be an aid somehow in reading, if that's how you look at it. And I mean, it's the material object. The book can probably be purchased again. Sure, you'd spend money again. But, you know, at this point, I kind of want to tear up a cheap paperback and take it to a binder and say, here, see what happens.
Okay, but I can't be the only one. Who else among you have had bad
have
behavior?
Sinned.
Have sinned.
Well, I mean, I write in books a lot, constantly. I used to really write in books. I don't write in library books because, yeah, it's not my property. But as far as really bad reading practices, okay, sometimes when I'm reading in the house, I will pace back and forth. And I think, I don't think I read as thoroughly when I do that. So I think it's a problem. And also I have a habit with, if I'm listening to audiobooks, deciding to pick up tasks that end up being more distracting. So then I'm listening to the audiobook, but I'm probably not listening to it. So that's not bad to the book. So that's not that kind of thing. But yeah, usually it's just stuff like that, but mostly writing in books. Dog earing, I dog ear. I do dog ear.
I have a question then to you guys. So when you annotate in books, like I also do this in my own books, not in library books or stuff I borrowed from somebody, but still I do. And like sometime later, you look into the same book, like a couple of years later, and you see those annotations and you think like, why did I write this nonsense?
Yes.
Sometimes those notes make no sense or just sound so ridiculous. Yeah, I noticed this recently, by the way. But my actual bookish scene would be, I used to read books in a bathtub, which is not really great for, I guess, for paper and for the glue probably as well. But now as I don't have a bathtub, I don't get to do this anymore.
I think that's pretty common.
Yes, I've definitely read in the bathtub. I also annotate books, not often. Has to be quite a particular reason for me to be reading, for me to also then annotate, I think. I wouldn't just do it in my general, like, fictional reading practices. Although sometimes if there's a really striking quote, well, actually, this has probably changed because of phones. So I used to circle it and then maybe write it out or type it up in an email to a friend, but now I'll just take a snapshot with my phone and send it to people. So I think that's actually reduced the amount of annotations I make, or just I save them for my own purposes. I've also definitely done walking while reading, which we'll get to in a second. That's a bad reading practice that was mentioned in a novel Milkman by Anna Burns. What else do I do? Well, so actually I would like to go back to the comment about this woman who was ripping pages out and how that's cathartic, and then it's a single read. So that's the reading practice that may be more damaging to the book, right? But is it also a bad practice in that a possible bad reading practice is that you jump to the end of the book, or just in general, you skip around. You're not reading this straight through narrative, which could include then going back in a book, because I know many times, especially in books with numerous characters or characters with difficult names, I have to go back and re-reference what I read, which is disrupting the narrative flow, right? Because I should remember that. And if I don't remember that, maybe there's a reason for me to not remember that. Also with, I'm not a big fan of crime novels or detective stories, but when I have read them, if you go back and you catch a little clue, maybe you're not supposed to quite remember it for the story. So if you're ripping the pages out, it's preventing you from skipping at least backwards, which is maybe then a better reading practice, and the bad reading practice is deviating from the narrative.
Well, it could be that this is a known memory practice for people. Like, if you're expected to really think about something that you've read, and you force yourself to say, I'm reading this, I discard it. So, I mean, there are ways that people practice remembering information for, say, oral storytelling or histories in, you know, different kind of cultures around the world. So these could be practices that aid in that. I mean, maybe it is a good thing. For me, myself, I try to never go back when I'm reading a book. If I'm reading it, I don't let myself go back and look at something. I finish the book, and if I still feel the need to go back, then I'll go back, but I don't like to let kind of the linear fashion of reading the book be altered in any way.
Well, I'll be a little pedantic. I mean, I know what you mean, but we are using now the term book to mean fiction or like narrative. And so I think it does depend on the use of the book, like what you want to get out of a book, because it is, you know, the genius of the codex, kind of, that you have that ability to go forward and back, and not like with a scroll, right, where you're like scrolling, where the hell was that again? It was on the 12th turn. I don't even know how you would try to remember something like that. But I know what you mean, yeah, for like a narrative, to you're supposed to sort of just shoot right through. I have an interesting example of a dog year in a book. It's actually from Eric Quacko, who works with manuscripts. I'm sure lots of listeners know who he is. And it's from a parchment manuscript. And what they've done, because the parchment would be too brittle to dog ear in the way that we think of it, the person has cut and then folded this section in order to have it stick out a bit so that you can find it, find that page more easily. And it's actually kind of like the banner photo of his webpage, medievalbooks.nl. So if anyone wants to take a look at it, it's there. But it's really neat, and it just shows how long these practices have been going on.
So then that becomes a permanent dog ear.
Yeah.
So more like an annotation than a temporary placeholder.
I suppose you could unfold it, but then you'd still have that
the cut
in it. Mm-hmm.
That is an interesting one.
I mean, I have actually dog-eared where I bend the page to such an extent that there's a little thing protruding also. So it's kind of a bookmarked fold. So not just the little corner thing. The subtle, ooh, I'm really not trying to damage the book, but I am because I don't have anything to use as a bookmark right now. But a whole, I'm folding the whole page, it's sticking out, it's wrong. So I have done that.
Something I've also done is my attempt to not dog ear. In these smaller paperbacks, I'll fold the entire page over to create a loop so that there's no permanent bend. It just is a placeholder. That's a really maybe weird dog ear that doesn't end up damaging the book. But it has to be very thin, otherwise the weight of the book itself will bend the page.
That's clever.
All right. So I guess we discussed quite a lot of like how physicality of book can suffer from our habits. What about the process itself, like of reading? Are there any weird, I don't know, bad reading habits that harm the process of actually taking in information, of enjoying a book?
Well, we did briefly mention one example, which is the reading while walking aspect, mm-hmm. and that was mentioned in Milkman. We have a brief quote. The protagonist says, "He appeared one day driving up in one of his cars as I was walking along reading Ivanhoe. Often I would walk along reading books. I didn't see anything wrong with this, but it became something else to be added as further proof against me. Reading while walking was definitely on the list." So basically she's saying that the rest of the people in her city view her reading while walking as a bad habit. And why would they view that as a bad habit? Again, it's this maybe idea that she could harm herself because she could trip while reading, or she's being antisocial because she's in a public situation but then not interacting with other people or concerned about other people because she's just focused on the book. Or maybe it's that she's not processing the book because she's doing this second activity.
I have a hard time reading when there's commotion of any kind. I can't tune it out. So for me, that doesn't work. But I mean, I can get into a zone if I'm reading while walking in the house and I know it's a safe environment and I get in a zone, but then at some point suddenly I snap out of it and I become aware I probably shouldn't be doing this. I'll run into the wall or something like that. And when that happens, then I'm not as focused on the book anymore. So, I don't know. It seems like there's ways that our brain, when we're reading, we can kind of lose ourselves no matter what we're reading, whether it's fiction or nonfiction. But then if we get some kind of hint of reality, then it kind of blocks the understanding and really taking in what you read. I don't know.
Natalia, didn't you say that you get seasick?
Yes, I've tried it a couple of times when I was reading while walking, and apparently just like it was a very small book. It was a pocket edition. The fact that when I read and I also kind of in my peripheral sight, I can see like the world around me move like the same as I would read if I were to read on a bus or on the train, same thing, like I immediately get sick. So unfortunately, it's very, I think I would benefit from reading while walking because I'd read more. But unfortunately, physically, it's challenging. So thank you, audiobooks, for fixing this problem for me.
But I mean, there's the one reading practice that we haven't touched upon, and that's reading in the bathroom. And there's the famous Seinfeld episode where George is in, what was it? Was it Brentano's bookstore, which doesn't even exist anymore, but they used to be a chain. And he goes in the bathroom with this big art book and it gets flagged. He buys it, doesn't he? And then takes it back, but it's flagged as being in the bathroom or something.
I think he has to buy it. I don't think it's his intention at the beginning of the episode. It's just his temporary reading. And what a choice, by the way.
Right.
An art book.
Mm. The soothing colors, I believe, is what he says.
But then I think the shop owner says he has to buy the book.
He has to buy it. And then he tries to give it to charity because he doesn't want the book that he took in the toilet in his house.
Oh, wait a second. This book has been in the bathroom.
What are you talking about? That's ridiculous.
It's been flagged. I know. I used to work at a Bertano's.
So that's kind of the elephant in the room, because we all know the library books have been in the bathroom, I think.
See, I've never thought about that. No,
I don't like it. I don't like reading in the bathroom.
I've also never been fond of reading in the bathroom. That's too short of a, you're getting more information about my bathroom routine than you want. It's too short of a time. I don't, like, how do you get through?
I don't know. I think people just take the time, whether they need it or not. But, you know, for me, it's get in, get out, get done. You know, you don't want to hang around.
Well, and we do all know somebody. We won't name names, but we do all know somebody that would read in the bathroom.
On that happy note.
Thank you so much for listening to this discussion today about bad reading practices. Don't forget to tell us what your bad reading practices are.
We're looking forward to hearing from you, and bye.
Bye.
Bye.